This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, man, just quick shout-out, thoughts and prayers. People in Florida, some of this footage coming from Hurricane Milton today, wow. And I'm just looking at the one, you know, my timeline's mostly sports. And so the Tropicana Field, I mean, if the Rays were in the Major League Baseball playoffs, they would be playing probably games at Minute Maid Park right now, because this stadium doesn't exist anymore. The walls and the roof are gone. It is a baseball field covered in debris with just a series of metal columns around it. It's an outdoor stadium, basically, now.
Yeah, and you're wondering, too, just like, what happens in a stadium like that when it's built specifically to not get rained on? Like, all the stuff that probably goes wrong when there's a boatload of water in it.
Yeah.
It's above and beyond your... Yeah, it's... last night, I saw it in various stages. At one point, one of the panels had been ripped off, and then you could see, like, once the wind got into it, it just started tearing the panels off.
It's gone.
One by one. It's nuts.
It's gone. And I know there's been all this talk like, hey, the Rays need a new stadium. You know how we talk about, like, in sports, so-and-so needs a new stadium. We'll probably talk about it with the Texans in a few years when NRG Stadium's 30 years old. The Texans need a new stadium. It happens all the time when stadiums get old. No, literally, Tampa Bay, the Rays need a new stadium. They don't have a stadium anymore. It's been blown over. It's gone. It doesn't exist.
That was, by the way, that was a discussion that came up during our Odyssey Out Front event the other day, where they were in conversation, the fact that the Texans stadium is pushing 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up on, we're not that close, but the 30-year mark is a notable one, where you need either new stadium or renovation or what have you. The Texans don't own that stadium. There might be some interesting things. This is the kind of thing where, on the business side of things, teams really hope you win a Super Bowl or two, because when it comes time to maybe change locations or pitch in for renovations with public money or whatever, it helps to have won a Super Bowl or two in recent years.
They are set up to be a team that can go to the county and really complain about some of the things that they need to subsidize either the current stadium or a future stadium.
Yeah,
D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud set you up well for future stadium conversations.
Look at all the revenue we're bringing in.
Right.
With all these people coming in and spending money and everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that well in 2021.
No, let's send Cully to go argue for it. Let's see what happens. Better times now for the Texans for sure. Here was CJ Stroud yesterday when he was asked about giving advice to his opposing quarterback this weekend, Drake May.
Fellow high draft pick who started as a rookie, is there any advice you would give someone in that situation?
Not this week. But no, I'm rooting him. I hope he does good, not against us, but in his future.
Now, I thought you nailed it earlier. I hadn't even thought about the angle of, like, okay, was that a thinly veiled Caleb Williams advice question that was being asked there? It's a good point. I was hoping that CJ would sarcastically say, yeah, here's my advice, and just tell him to start doing really stupid things. Like, yeah, I would target Derek Stingley every play. I would throw at Derek Stingley Jr. for sure. I would,
You should, if anything, man, don't listen to all these haters that want you to, to take what the defense gives you and everything. Just be you.
Yep.
You be the best version of yourself.
Yes.
You just go ahead and attack downfield.
Yeah.
Don't listen to all this propaganda about how these windows close tight in the NFL. That's just people trying to keep you down.
That's it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just trying to get in your head. This was CJ Stroud back on draft night, the draft show that CJ did with Micah Parsons, where they were breaking down all the different picks. CJ was asked by Adam Lefko, who was the host, who's the most pro-ready of these rookie quarterbacks?
Who's the most NFL-ready?
I feel like Drake May is. You watch his tape. just his arm talent jumps off. I mean, he's one guy that, like, to me, like, the one mistake that I did early on in, like, this first couple of games was I moved around too much. Like, I didn't get the ball out on time. I started taking risks that weren't even downfield. They're necessarily scrambling. And when you watch his tape, he scrambles when he needs to. He throws guys open. He has like, right here, he has rollout ability, like, different arm angles. So
I feel like when you watch,
like, Drake May.
Okay. He likes Drake May. CJ likes Drake May. What do you think of his breakdown there, Seth? Does that match the Seth Payne film analysis?
Yeah. And I think the one thing, the double-sided blade there of him being patient or not running just to run, is that he also might hold on to the ball a little too long at times. You know, like, it's good. He's gonna hang in there and wait for the play to develop, but there's times where he either gets locked in or stares down, like a lot of young quarterbacks do. But I mean, this is on a scouting report out of college too. And that's what you hope, is that, all right, you can get him to either lock in on a guy and bait him a little bit, or that he's just gonna stick around too long and then make a late decision or take a sack or whatever it might be. That his bravado or his calm under pressure can be used against him, as well as it could be an asset for him.
This might be the game that a lot of fans have been looking for, where either Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter or both get kind of a cluster of sacks in this game. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of times these double-digit sack guys, they're great players. I'll use J.J. Watt as an example. You go back and look at J.J. Watt, and J.J. Watt was maybe the best defensive player of this century. He was incredible. But he would pile up a lot of sacks against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans, you know? To get to a 17.5 sack season, you've got to really take advantage of the games that you are going against much lesser opposition. There's no crime in that. It doesn't make him less of a great player. But this seems like a real opportunity, especially when you talk about Drake May holding on to the football. This feels like one of those games where either Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter, we look at the box score afterwards, and they've got a nice crooked number under sacks and QB hits, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think getting them into third down, where the Texans have been very blitz-happy on third downs, and really just throwing the kitchen sink at them in terms of blitzes and confusing looks and everything else, when you feel like you've got the ability to do that. Some of that hinges on the health of Kamari Lassiter. So Kamari Lassiter didn't practice yesterday with a shoulder injury. And if, you know, one of the reasons D'Amico's blitzing more than he ever has in his 4 years now as a defensive coordinator is that he feels good about their ability to play man. That takes a little bit of a hit without Kamari Lassiter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, what is their depth at corner? I mean, they brought Kadar Holman back in the building. I wonder if that's any... I wonder if them bringing Kadar Holman back is any sort of foreshadowing as to what Lassiter, what his chances of getting on the field are over the next week or two.
Right.
I mean, they're not putting him on IR, so it's not, whatever it is, at least not yet, whatever it is, as of right now, is not a severe 4-week injury.
Mm-hmm.
But Kadar Holman coming back in the building and them not dropping a cornerback as a corresponding move could be a tell, maybe, as to what Lassiter's chances of getting on the field are this week.
Yeah, that's what's more concerning to you, Kamari Lassiter's potential absence or the fact that both the offensive tackles didn't practice yesterday?
I would say, you know what, this is going to sound weird to say, Kamari Lassiter probably for me, because I think Blake Fisher did okay as the right tackle. I mean, you're not going against world beaters here with the Patriots. They traded Matthew Judon, so you don't have to worry about him being lined up over the rookie. I think Blake Fisher did fine, and I think Laramie was just getting a regular veteran with an ankle issue day off yesterday. Like, I'm purely guessing, but I'm guessing Laramie's going to play. He played the whole second half of the game after, you know, he suffered the ankle injury early. Or he's had that ankle injury since the Jacksonville game, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was probably them just managing him, like they manage him all the time, it feels like.
Yeah.
So I think Laramie's going to play. I'm fine with Blake Fisher. I don't know what you do at that opposite corner. They're not even playing a corner at slot corner right now. They're playing Jalen Petrie at slot corner.
So, right. Yeah. Know, so, like, I mean, that's where you're the thin. I feel like they're thinner at cornerback.
No doubt.
Than it feels like, just because he's not. Petrie is not a cornerback who's playing your nickelback. He's a little bit different, you know? And so, and we've seen that at times you know, they've struggled in man coverage when they're facing good receivers. And if you have Jalen Petrie out there in man a bunch versus fast guys, you don't feel awesome about it. Last week, it wasn't that big a deal because the Bills don't have that many genuinely fast dudes.
Yeah.
And likewise, the Patriots this week, I don't worry about it as much. I think that physically they can match up all right. That's where I would still be worried about the prospect of both offensive tackles being out. Even though I know what you said about Laremy is correct.
Yeah.
But just because I fear the Patriots defense more than I fear the receiving core of the New England Patriots.
If I knew Laremy was going to be out, then hell yeah, I'm more nervous about that. I'm just predicting he's going to play. Maybe we see a little Desmond King elevation off the practice squad this weekend. I could see that. I mean, Desmond King's on this roster right now. Desmond King has a weird relationship with the Texans. You know, they repeatedly cut him, but they repeatedly bring him back. And when they bring him back, he repeatedly actually is involved in some pretty good plays for the defense, you know?
Yeah. Like sometimes immediately so. Like when they brought him back last year, he was huge on a goal line stand.
Yes, he is. He is on this practice squad right now.
I just, or no, it was a backed up situation when he came in that game. So I think that, or was it a goal?
No, anyway. It was a goal line stand at the end of the Jacksonville game. Stand. Yeah.
That was the one where Jalen Petrie started running into the tunnel as the play was still going on. That was the moment where I was like, all right, this Jalen Petrie has got to get over himself a little bit because this is not acceptable behavior. That was last year. Happy with him this year.
Yes, Desmond King also had that play against Cleveland in the playoff game. Remember where he tackled Flacco and he braked Dance spun on top of him? Remember that? He like did a little whirly-cue on top of him there?
I was surprised he didn't get fined after that for a choreographed celebration.
Yeah. But maybe Desmond King elevation is the solution this weekend. In fact, I'm going on the record. I'm predicting Desmond King, if Kamari Lasseter doesn't play, we get a Desmond King elevation off the practice.
Desmond King is that kitchen implement that you bought when you were drunk on QVC like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're like, why the hell did I buy a cornball maker or whatever? And then all of a sudden, what the occasion arises where you're like, some business client you're trying to impress is like, God, I wish I could really go for a cornball right now. And like, what? I got just the thing. I got a cornball maker.
Have you ever bought anything stupid like that off of an infomercial late at night? Like where you're like, oh God, what was I thinking? It shows up at your house like 2 days later and you're like, oh.
No, I think I've definitely done some stupid internet stuff. Like on eBay back in the day, that was where I would get into a bidding war for something I didn't really want all that much.
You were competitive.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let this guy get this autographed picture of the other Wahlberg brother or something like that.
I did that. I used to be guilty of that because it's not like I wear dress clothes a bunch, but when I do, I like to look all right. Mm-hmm. So I would find incredible deals on dress shoes or something.
Yeah.
And I ended up like all of a sudden I was like Imelda Marcos with like a closet full of shoes and I never wore them. And it was, because of being drunk on eBay.
The stupidest thing I ever bought drunk at night on an infomercial was a hot dog steamer. Like this thing.
Pretty dumb.
It is really dumb, but it made pretty good hot dogs, but it was very labor intensive. You had to take the hot dogs and like, they had like these prongs that you had to stick into either side of them, and you'd stick like 7 hot dogs in a row, close the shield, fill it with a little bit of water, and it would just steam the hot dogs for like 10 minutes. And
how do they end up tasting differently than a normal, like microwaving a hot dog?
They did. Well, microwaving hot dog is a texture thing. You know what I mean? Like if you microwave a hot dog wrong, It can get a little ugly.
It can. I guess the only thing is you don't get the browning of it, but it doesn't sound like the thing that you use would brown it at all.
No, it doesn't brown it. It's the replacement for somebody who fills up a pot of water and drops them in,
boils their
hot dogs. And it took me one try to go, you know what's a whole lot easier? Just filling up a pot with water and dropping these hot dogs in here.
If you're going to boil a hot dog, I've never understood the appeal of that versus microwaving it. I don't know, Sean. Maybe I just have a knack, a feel for the appropriate number of. I can tell by the weight and circumference and everything else of a hot dog. Oh yeah, that's a 37-second hot dog right there.
Yeah, you make valid points. You're discounting my dream and fantasy of being a New York street hot dog vendor, where I get to actually take my prongs out and pull the hot dog out of the water, put it in a bun, and do it again two or three more times for the other hot dogs I eat in one sitting. And yeah, so that's
why. That dream been replaced by being a food truck operator? Because that's all the, you know, it's been a while now. I was about to say, like, that's all the rage these days. It's been about like 15 years now that food truck cuisine has actually been a thing. So every now and then I'm like, I see somebody like serving up something that I like at some kind of barbecue or whatever, yeah, whatever the little spin is on. I'm like, yeah, that would be nice. On the weekends and do the food truck thing.
There's a great food truck at the gas station right near where we turn to go on Merworth to go park in the media lot at Texans games.
Yeah.
It's like a Tex-Mex food truck. It's really, really good. I was really bummed out 2 days ago. I was walking downtown. I was going to the mayor's office for our friend Cindy Bourbano. It was getting named Cindy Bourbano Day. She's one of the DJs on Mega. So congrats to her. On Tuesday, October the 8th was Cindy Bourbano Day. So I, along with several of our coworkers, went to the ceremony. And I parked like four blocks from town hall because there was no parking. I was really bummed as I was walking through downtown Houston on a vibrant, sunny, nice day. No street vendors for anything. That's what I love about New York, man. If I got an inkling for a gyro or a hot dog, I only need to wait about 15 seconds for a light to change and walk across the street to go get one. There's nothing like that in Houston. What about me, man? I get hungry walking from my car to the mayor's office. I was really hankering for a street dog. We got none of that. No, no umbrella push cart street guys.
It's kind of cruel to, I don't know. Is that a culture in any hot city for like actual food stand like people in America, at least? I know it's like
a good question, but it doesn't solve my problem at all. It's all about me. I needed a hot dog in that moment.
Well, you should just take the matters into your own hand and get yourself a food truck and then just, you know, or several, and plant them in appropriate places around the city.
Nobody
where you might need
that.
A food truck. Nice thing about a food truck is the sense of superiority, I'm guessing you feel, because you're so much higher than the customer.
Yeah, that's true.
You're kind of like, you're like the judge of whether or not they get their food.
Yeah, that's
true. You've also got, like, if you get a unruly customer, you've got the high ground. Blows down on them much easier than they can try to fight back.
High ground is big. You're right, Seth. I might like a food truck because if there's one thing I like that people know that I like, it's feeling superior to other people.
Yeah.
So I might really like a food truck. I don't even care what the food is. I just like looking down on people, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I'll just sell potato chips or something.
You should have gotten down to Bayway during when they were doing their free lift special. You could have gotten a food truck with a 4-inch lift.
that would have been amazing. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Nico Collins injury. We have an interesting text from somebody. This is the most optimistic text I've read about Nico Collins hamstring injury. And where does the hamstring injury for Nico rank on the Texans injury devastation scale? We've got that for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. This was D'Amico Ryans yesterday on losing Nico Collins.
Yeah, unfortunately that we'll, you know, not have Nico. Great player, been a great player all year for us, best receiver in the league, but he'll take the time to get healthy. He'll be back for us, so encouraged by that news, he'll be back at some point this season. And it's like always in the NFL, there's always injuries that happen in our game, and it's opportunity for other guys to step up and make the most of their opportunity. That's what the league is about. A lot of guys who have stepped in when other guys were out and made a name for themselves and, you know, made some big plays in the league. So we're looking for the same thing for whoever it may be, guys just owning their opportunity.
Do you expect it to be the minimum 4 games, or could it be longer?
I'm not getting into all that. We'll see where we end up.
Yeah, D'Amico is never specific on these things, in no small part because you don't know. Hamstring injuries are weird. Nobody knows how long D'Amico or Nico Collins is going to be out for. I will say, if I'm just reading into wording, Seth, for a second, where he said that Nico's going to take the time to get healthy, if I'm going to read into that, then I'm going to read into it as that they, and maybe this is why it took a couple days to execute this transaction of putting him on the injured reserve, because they had to maybe really think about this. It's not severe enough. The severity is such that it was a real debate whether to put him out for 4 games or not, as opposed to like going week to week with it. Take the time to get healthy. That I'm hoping it's what we talked about as the best case yesterday, which is where they all took a step back and said, look, it's a long season. It's a hamstring. Maybe we shouldn't have brought you back in the first place when you had a hamstring a week ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And these games coming up 4 weeks from now, really starting in week, you got the Lions in week 10, You got the Cowboys in week 11. You got two division games after that with Tennessee and Jacksonville. Then your bye week, and then you hit that 10 games or 10 day, three game set here. Like, man, let's just make sure we can muck our way through these next four games without you, Nico, but let's make sure we get you healthy for what is going to be really that middle meaty part of the season that's going to determine what we are this season, you know?
Yeah, that's where, whether it's a silver lining or anything else, I mean, we've seen in the past couple weeks, all right, let's figure out how to get Dalton Schultz more involved. What's it look like when we have Stephon Diggs or Tank Dell as the guy who's our primary deep threat or our zone beater or whatever else like that? And, you know, Agumba Wale getting involved in the passing game has been a good thing, other than having to sacrifice downs to the run gods to keep defenses honest. It's been a good thing that he's been involved in the passing game. So I hate even talking about it this way because it makes it sound or feel like, well, yeah, because you'll beat the Patriots no matter what. I don't mean it that way at all, but it does work out timing-wise that it's better to do it now and have to figure this out than during that really rough stretch.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be honest with yourself if you're the Texans. As long as you're not saying it into a microphone, I think it's okay to be honest with yourself and go, look, the next four games are the Patriots. Packers are a good team. You got the Colts at home. Colts aren't a great team. You got them at home. And then the Jets are a mess right now. I think it's okay to like self-assess and go, okay, if there's a part of the schedule where we can withstand this with a payoff for the greater good down the road, I think that's okay. Now, this texter is maybe a little too far off on the silver lining. Like, it's not even a lining. Like, it's a whole silver article of clothing here. I think Nico being out is a good thing. I feel CJ needs to develop better chemistry with Tank and Diggs so they can be a big threat, too. That way, by the time Nico comes back, all three should be deadly.
Deadly. This is the thing. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing all depends on how, you know, how they operate with this hand that they've been dealt.
Yes.
I think that who was it? It wasn't Rick Rubin. It was some other music producer who had worked with, like, the Stones and the team, people like that. Was that he would constantly kind of throw wrenches into the way a band operated, like their creative process. Like, might come to the studio and say, hey, no, you actually have to, you're going to do this on a completely different instrument. You know, like, I don't know, you're going to do it on the kazoo. But like, do things that they felt uncomfortable with, and it kind of, it would open things up to them that they wouldn't have considered before.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, through a little bit of adversity, you discover things about yourself and find out, like, okay, yeah, you know what, we should have been leaning on this more the first time or the first time around. And Bobby Slowick's included in that.
Yes.
And some of the experimentation or the way that you're operating, you're always in a battle between what your expectations were for how you were going to operate and then confronting the harsh reality that your best laid plans aren't working out. So how do you pivot off of that? This forces you to pivot, and maybe they discover a couple little kind of uncut gems that they've got sitting right there.
Yeah, I think it's a real opportunity for Bobby Slowick maybe to win back some of the equity with the fan base that he's lost through these first 5 weeks. I think it's undoubtedly, I'm not saying the fan base thinks he's trash or anything like that. I think he's a smart guy and a good offensive coordinator who can't get a run game going for some reason.
Yeah.
So I think he's backslid with the fan base. I don't know if he's backslid with other front offices around the league when it comes time to hire coaches next year. I have no idea. The odds makers think he's fourth on the board right now to be the Jets' next head coach. So who the hell knows? But I think it's a real opportunity for Bobby Slowick to win back hearts and minds of some of the Texan fans over the next 4 weeks. If he can put together a good offense without Nico Collins out there, I think that's a big feather in his cap.
Yeah, I think, honestly, a lot of this remains what it was in the first, the whole offseason. We've been saying, look, Bobby Slowick did some really good things with a rookie quarterback last year. In terms of him as an offensive coordinator, has he shown that he can actually put together a competent run game? And so far, he has not.
Yeah.
And it's not that you have to major in the run or anything like that, but if you want to be a genuinely potent NFL offense, there's going to be times where you got to run the ball or it makes sense to run the ball. Can you do it then? And the Texans haven't been able to do that. And it's putting them in this bind where, my God, should it just be CJ sitting back there and trying to pass 85% of the time if you want to actually score points. Let's make it even simpler. It's not about whether or not they can run the ball. Can you guys consistently score lots of points?
Yes.
Because you're not. The stat that I screwed up last week was that I thought that they were scoring more points than I thought they were. They're middle of the pack in scoring offense.
Yeah.
There you go. There's your advanced stat.
Scoring points. How much of their being stuck in mud after Nico went out against Buffalo gets remedied with having a week to game plan without Nico out there? You know what I mean? Like, you don't game plan going into the Buffalo game like, okay, well, here are all the plays we're going to run if Nico Collins pulls a hamstring in the second quarter. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right,
now you've yeah. got 2 days of film, or, you know, however many days you got film, and you got three practices to start installing some things that are a non-Nico friendly offense.
Well, right? And now, okay, the other side of it, though, too, is, okay, they've been facing all these looks, you know, from each defense. It was just playing a whole bunch of cover two and everything to try to take the top off of Nico Collins and everybody else. All right, are they going to continue to see that? Or are the Patriots going to come out and play it more aggressively and play just their normal game plan without Nico Collins yeah. out there? So they gotta figure that part of it out too. Which is, if teams are more aggressive when Nico isn't out there, then I actually feel pretty good about their ability to crack open some of what you saw last year.
Yeah,
because CJ's really, really good. I think if I'm a team looking at the Texans, I'm going to say, look, with or without Nico Collins, teams have been able to sit back and cover two, and the Texans can't run the ball or sustain drives mm-hmm. without, you know, teams are just playing cover two. I'm just going to do more of that. Until the Texans prove that they can actually hurt me in this look, I'm going to play it safe and just try to just keep a bottle on this thing.
Yeah. I guess, too, until we know, we may not know the answer to what I'm about to ask until we see how long Nico is out for. But, like, I think of, like, the devastation scale of other injuries the Texans have had in recent years. You know, like, all the J.J. Watt injuries just felt totally devastating, you know. Certainly any of the quarterback injuries, Matt Schaub in 2011, Deshaun Watson the day after the World Series ended in 2017, complete devastation. You know, Cushing, Jadeveon Clown, like, these are all season-ending kind of things. D'Amico's already confirmed he'll be back this year. Like, so, like, the devastation scale on this injury for me, especially when you consider that there's still guys out there who you can attack with. Like, I'm like a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10 with my devastation right now, whereas all those, like, season enders are all, like, 9s and 10s to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This is overcomable.
This is very overcomable. I guess the part of it is just, we know what happens with hamstrings and guys that have recurring hamstring injuries
yeah.
over the course of a season or a career. That's what makes it dicey.
Yep.
It's just that and this is another thing that every fan base feels. Like, every fan base feels that we've been cursed with hamstrings more than other fan bases. It's an epidemic.
Yeah.
It's an epidemic in sports. Has been for decades. People get a hammy, and it's the one thing that would least affect you in normal life, but that devastates you the most in sports. These hammies.
Yeah, yeah. That's someone said that the new H on the helmet was for hamstring, not for Houston. Yesterday, that was pretty funny.
Texans. The Texans pass 68% of the time on first down, Sean.
Are you sure? Why are you still looking this stuff up? Why are you doing this?
I did
this
during
yourself?
The break because I just wanted to be sure.
You're already breaking your promise to me, which is you were going to tell me when you were doing this stuff so I could stop you from doing this stuff.
Because it was such a bad mistake.
You're a
me.
Bad alcoholic, man.
Well, I got people. So I messed up and said that the Texans actually pass more frequently than any other team on first down.
Yeah.
And I was wrong on that. I misread a stat.
Yeah.
But my point was. Yeah, look, I think Bobby is responsible for a lot of the issues that are holding back the team. I'm not giving him a pass at all.
Right.
I just always find it funny that every single year, every single fan base thinks that their offensive coordinator runs the ball on first down mm-hmm. way too much or all the time. And every single first down, they call a run. It's like, 68% of the time they're calling a pass.
Right.
It's just that the times they do run it on first down, they're really bad
they're
at
horrible
it.
At
and
it,
yeah. and it's, so you, it just it annoys the hell out of you, damn it.
They're horrible at it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love people already texting in like, hey, if Slowik leaves, Stefanski would be a real coup. Okay, A, Slowik hasn't gone anywhere yet. Stefanski's still the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And that's for the offseason. That's for the offseason, man. We're not hiring OCs in week five. They're 4-1, damn it. They're 4-1. Now, we did say, should they call Robert Saleh? And I think when we say that, like, not to replace Matt Burke. Matt Burke's doing fine. He's doing fine as the DC for this team. Just, is it worth a phone call? Maybe he wants to, you know, maybe Robert Saleh's got that bug. He just wants to be around a football team, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Hey, quick reminder, tomorrow our friend Ted Johnson is going to join us on the show. 9 o'clock. Old Teddy J. We'll get the real scoop as to what's going on up in New England and how they feel about that team up there from Ted tomorrow. Ted does not mince words.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
Yeah.
No. Ted's not afraid to be unpopular with anybody in New England or anything. He's very, very open and honest about it.
Yep.
I'll have all kinds of stats ready for him.
No.
Disregard that last stat I just gave you, by the way.
Are you serious?
Are you serious? Yes.
Ben, this is going to be hard. Ben, I'm going to need your help on this, dude. I'm going to need your help on this.
I'm done. I'm turning off all the computers.
Okay. All right. So Nico to the IR. How does Stephon Diggs factor into this for CJ Stroud? CJ talked about that yesterday. We'll have some good CJ Stroud stuff coming up for you next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Nico's been a big topic today. Nico Collins. Here's CJ Stroud yesterday on how Stephon Diggs' experience and reliability helps with Nico going to the IR.
I think he can be great. You know, I definitely think that, you know, he's already a leader, but, you know, you can tell in practice today, he knows, you know, his responsibility now, and Nico's out. So that's really all of them. You know, everybody got to step up, and even myself included, you know, to pick up the slack where, you know, Nico isn't playing. So definitely just got to hold each other accountable and just be better at that. So definitely he's going to be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I think to me, the biggest thing in missing Nico, I mean, obviously the sheer productivity you miss. There's no other receiver like Nico Collins on this roster. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there are certain things Nico does in the passing game that literally nobody else. There's things he does that not a lot of guys in the league, period, can do, let alone guys on the Texans depth chart, just with the size, the run after the catch, the ability to break tackles, which he's better than every receiver in the league at statistically. That's the hardest part to replay. You got to find a different way to skin the cat this week.
It is, right. If you're talking about just how's it look on paper versus anything else, I keep saying, hey, you know, Joe Mixon coming back might at least be a bigger shot in the arm for this offense that just can't score as many points as it feels like they should, because at least they can run the ball then. And then maybe that makes it easier for Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell to pick up the slack with Nico Collins. But there, I mean, Nico is a guy who's leading the league in receiving despite every defense trying specifically to take the top off of the offense. And he was still working with Nico, but in some regards, maybe this is what the Texans need to see, that, all right, we are trying to get the ball to Nico, but maybe sometimes to our detriment. Sometimes where we really do just got to be a team that can carve people up underneath, that can get the runs and the screens and some of the shorter stuff working, that we've got to get better at that. And then all of a sudden, it's even easier to get the ball to Nico when defenses have to cover the entire field.
It's hard to think of plays where the ball goes in Nico's direction where good things don't happen. Like, when I say good things don't happen, I'm talking about like even incompletions. I mean, CJ's passer rating targeting Nico last year was like in the 130s. Like, just like crazy, would lead the league. And if all he did was target Nico Collins, like that passer rating would lead the league by like 20 points or 25 points. Like, it's just, when he throws it in his direction, good things happen a disproportionate amount of times.
And I guess, though, but again, it tells you exactly where the offense is right now, because let's go back in time and let's say that Nico Collins just didn't exist at all.
Okay.
But you had Tank Dell, who'd had a really good year as a rookie but got injured, and then you'd traded for Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
And you've got Joe Mixon in the backfield. You would sit and say, all right, well, look, that's with C.J. Stroud at quarterback – You know, maybe who knows exactly where Stephon Diggs in his career. He's not who he used to be, but he's still a guy with a capital G. That, yeah, you should be able to, you should be a good offense versus the New England Patriots with that offense.
Yes.
And so that's where I'm not overly distraught by it. Yeah, but I'm in this spot where I'm like, yeah, but even with Nico Collins, they have not looked right. So this, they've really got to fix those things now.
If they were to get Mixon back, and I am totally spitballing here. I'm just going through some of the best Texans teams that I have in my head in previous years. There's an argument to be made that if they get Mixon back and you don't have Nico, but you got Tank, you got Stephon Diggs, you got Dalton Schultz as your tight end, and you got Joe Mixon as your running back, especially with CJ as your quarterback. But I'm just talking the skill weapons that the quarterback has. Even without Nico, might be the best group in the history of the franchise compared to previous years. Because there were so many years where all they had was DeAndre Hopkins and a banged up Will Fuller and Lamar Miller at running back with no tight end. You know, like the closest would probably be the Pete Kubiak years where you had Andre Johnson, Owen Daniels, Arian Foster, and then Kevin Walter.
And Kevin Walter for how good he was in that offense and everything. But it's up there. It's up there with one of the better. On paper, you should have that. So then we get to back to our old friend, the offensive line, and how much are they limiting them, all of that. And it does, it's as much as fun as we've had with me messing up the stats about Bobby Slowick's play calling. I think some people think I'm trying to stick up for Bobby Slowick or say that he's awesome. No, Bobby Slowick is very much under the scrutiny for all of this right now, in terms of taking all this weaponry and tying it together into a genuinely impressive offense. So it's very much on him, and that is the test and the challenge. If they don't ever get it clicking this year, then it's going to be a big conversation point about what do we do with Bobby Slowick in the offseason, because they're not there right now.
Yeah, way more of a conversation than what team is Bobby Slowick going to take over. You know, like whereas last year was, could he be a head coach? If this is what the offense looks like all year long, then there's probably more of a conversation the Texans are having about, do we need to go in a different direction offensively, what you're saying. Yeah. Here's C.J. Stroud yesterday. Thoughts regarding the Patriots' defense?
They've been really stout, you know. So they've kind of held their team up for a while, them and their special teams. And I think they're going to start Dre, you know, just to get a good flow on offense, which, you know, will be interesting because their defense has been playing very well. Gonzalez has been playing really great. He's definitely a good man-to-man corner. Does a really good job in that. And then 31 on the other side does a really good job. So they have a lot of good pieces on defense. Their D-line is big guys and play big and, you know, fill up gaps, helping the run game a lot. You know, 48 jumps off on film. He's a good player. So, you know, just all around another good defense to play against, and definitely just got to be aware of just all the stuff that they do.
All right, so there you go. The breakdown of the Patriots defense. They're really styled is what is what CJ said. Now, the only guy he named by name was Christian Gonzalez.
Christian Gonzalez has been having a good year.
Everybody else is a number.
Good pickup for them. Gonzalez is, Gonzalez is an interesting one because matched up on Nico, then Gonzalez has some length and some playmaking ability, and it might get interesting with some of the jump balls or whatever that you might throw to Nico, or some of the 50-50 balls. Whereas Gonzalez is going to have an advantage over if he's got Tank Dell or Stephon Diggs covered, he's got the advantage in those situations. So that's something that CJ's very aware of, obviously.
Yep.
I think that they did a good job of really blowing up the Patriots and talking about what a really, really good and impressive team they are, offensively, running the ball, defensively, without any real evidence that they actually are. They've played some really good and competitive games, but they're not a good team. And I say that with zero amount of cockiness or anything. I remember too well the Panthers game from last year.
Yeah.
I remember too well the Jets game from last year. The Zach Wilson having the performance of his career. But they're just flat out not a good football team.
Yeah.
So the Texans losing with or without Nico Collins would be a huge upset.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, the Jets are 2-3 and they're team turmoil right now. The Patriots are 1-4. But I mean, other than Jabril Peppers being a complete knucklehead and going on the commissioner's exempt list, that happened yesterday. They're a rebuilding team with a young quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, at 1-4, this should be a team that is still giving out maximum effort across all three sides of the football. Like, because the they're a young rebuilding team with a first year head coach. The Jets are a team with an aging quarterback who may or may not be running the whole show up there, and just fired their head coach. Like, in some ways, I'd rather play the Jets this weekend than the Patriots, you know, just because they're such a mess right now.
That Ulrich seems like the classic interim coach bump, emotional bump.
So you might want to avoid him for the first couple weeks?
He seems like a man's man. He's a football guy. You know, he's the kind of guy. But he's replacing a man's man in a football guy.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. I think when it comes to the emotional bump that you get from Ulrich, I don't know if how much is he just pretty much another Robert Saleh?
I don't know, man. Like, but Saleh's a clean-looking dude. You know what I mean? He's got that clean, bald head. There's no facial. Well, there's been facial hair at times, but there wasn't more recently. Like, he looks a lot. Like, Ulrich looks like he's not afraid to go on, like, a three-week camping trip and kill his food with his own hands. You know what I'm saying?
His beard's a little more manicured than I'd like for him being a genuine football guy. What? But he does have an outdoorsman. He's got a little bit of an Andy Huberman look about him.
Okay. I'll take your word for
it. You know who that is?
No.
Okay. He's a scientist that gives a lot of nutrition advice and
Andy
stuff.
Huberman,
really interesting guy.
Andy Huberman. I'm gonna look him up right now the way you look up stats. I bet I find him.
He'll pop right up.
He does. Yeah. That's a good one, Seth.
He's gonna tell you all about your dopamine and everything like
He's
that.
He's listed as Andrew Huberman in Wikipedia. So
what did I call him? Andy?
Andy, yeah. Like,
he'll,
you know,
always be Andy to me.
Yeah.
Ever since we went on a dopamine fast together in the Montana wilderness.
Put some respect on his name. It was very funny yesterday. I was listening to In the Loop, listening to Figgy's mixtape at 120. And it was one of the greatest segments in the history of the show because, Seth, yesterday they did two things. One, they power ranked the likelihood of one of us here at Sports Radio 610 stealing a package from an Odyssey coworker that was out in the lobby. The Mo from the Morning Bull had a package in the lobby that had an inflatable unicorn float, like for a swimming pool.
Oh, so that's what it was. I still hadn't figured out what it was.
Yeah, it was an inflatable unicorn float.
Who won that?
Say, because Figgy's going to announce it. Do you know who did it?
Oh, no. Yeah, I know who did it. Yeah.
I don't know that we picked a most likely. I think we just kind of ran
commented.
Through the candidates.
Well, I mean, I kind of pieced it together based on how likely you guys thought each person was. Fortunately, Seth, you and I were at the bottom of the list of this.
Because you're not minorities.
What are you doing right now?
All right, that was John Lopez.
That's right.
Just to be sure.
It was your list.
It doesn't get picked up as like, you know, my face is on the audio or whatever. Like,
right.
That was an actual minority saying that.
Could not have done this because they're not minorities. Yeah. Said by an actual minority, please. Yeah.
Middle-aged white bro, Seth Payne, after grossly misstating some statistics earlier in this show.
Oh, man, that one actually, you had me going for about 20 minutes because those numbers were so disparate from the next gen stats.
It's going to feel horrible.
I know it's not your fault, I had already had an occasion where I was like, man, is this right? And so then added a little bit more doubt to me.
Oh, it was so wrong.
So disgusted with himself.
I can't.
Right,
they're top five, though.
In terms of frequency or success rate or what?
Frequency, definitely not success
just
rate.
Wants
top
to go
five
away.
And how often they pass on first down?
Yes, sir. I'll double check that for you just to make sure that I'm not lying to
Anywho,
you.
Anywho, on the
as far as the Figgy's mixtape yesterday, so my feeling
top 10 rather. No,
my feeling was knowing what the package was. My feeling was either Clint, who has kids, Ron, who has kids, or you, who has grandkids, who all might like a unicorn float in the pool. That's not me dividing it up across different ethnic demographics.
Although you did.
But that's not my purpose.
That's right.
That's not my purpose.
It was not
though.
Intentional.
It's a coincidence.
Okay.
It's a coincidence, yes.
No, it made sense. And that's what they kind of landed on as well.
Yeah. So, okay, good. So there's a reveal today on the show.
Yes.
Who did it? Okay,
there's
good.
A reveal.
Good.
I did. I took a Diet Mountain Dew out of the bottom drawer of the fridge.
That's fair
a
game.
A couple weeks ago. No, I did. Well, it's one of those
oh,
things.
Oh, you took right? my Mountain Dew.
No. Don't tell.
No, I'm just playing.
Eric with a K had Mountain Dews in the fridge like a week ago that had his name written on
them.
Oh, well,
no, you don't didn't do have that. His name on it. Yeah. No, I thought that it was like on a Friday night I was still up at the studio, and I thought that it must have been from something. But then I don't know. I hope it wasn't somebody's. I got to figure it out.
Well, I'm just saying he may have had his name written on the ones remaining there because he had one disappear. You know?
No. He uses a different fridge than the one I'm
Oh, he does? Okay, gotcha. Okay.
What's the protocol there? I understand, like, oh, never take anything. But if it's have you just eyeballed a thing and seen it there for long enough and been like, you know what? At this point, yeah. Do you even really want it?
We have a lot of stuff that's left over from some of the meetings they have there.
Exactly.
With the salespeople
exactly.
And everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I assumed it was. It was from a party or something. So, yeah. But you know what they say when you assume.
I'm starting to realize who might be stealing my Zevia.
I've never had a Zevia once in my life.
Yeah. They're very tasty. Zero
Are they?
Sugar, zero calories.
Okay, so maybe I'll start stealing your Zevia. Yeah.
Exactly like, sure, you have permission.
That's a good sell. That's a good sell.
Reggie, I like you. Yeah, you're
if
good.
It's in there on a Saturday or Sunday, my limits go down. I feel like, okay, somebody forgot about that. You can't leave it on there for over the weekend expecting
I agree.
To be there. Yeah.
Are
Put your
you
name
serious?
On a weekend?
Wild. Are you serious right now that you can't leave something in there? By the way, I'm up here on weekends. Okay.
So am I.
Bring extras.
Now I know who stole my Zevias.
I don't usually. No, I never take. I hate Zevias. That stupid fake sugar smell. No,
Very
I don't like
tasty.
Those. You don't have to worry about
Very
that.
Tasty.
No, I don't. But I don't. Even like, but I put my stuff up there on the weekend, but I kind of like, I'm like, if it's gone, it's gone. I get it. I don't take other people's food generally. That Diet Mountain Dew is the only one I've ever done where I wasn't certain that it was community property.
Says you.
And I feel bad about it.
Yeah.